I would suit up in my uniform, and you're going out on patrol. What are we going to do tonight? Well, we're going to rob some drug dealers, and I know how to do it really well.
Listen to and follow The Set, an Odyssey Originals documentary podcast series, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your shows.
I'm not a bad guy, man, but I loved being that dirty.
Alrighty, Zach Gelb Show, CBS Sports Radio. We'll get to a news brief in just a second. But McKeon, I made five MLB second half predictions yesterday. And I will say, when you fill in, not that we do a ton of baseball on this show, but this is a time of year to do it. I think from a knowledge standpoint with baseball, that you are one of the sharper baseball minds around here. Whatever you say is not always right.
Saying a lot about the talent here.
But what I'm saying is, you watch a ton of baseball. Now, Wednesday night in August.
Cubs, Cardinals, yeah.
Yeah, McKeon's locked into the Seattle Mariners up against, the Toronto Blue Jays.
Castillo,
all right,
over 6.5 Ks.
So,
lock it in.
Here are my five MLB second half predictions. I want to see where you lie on them. So give me like a 30-second reaction to each of them. Number five. I love what Ellie De La Cruz has done with the Reds. Who hasn't? The Reds are going to win the NL Central.
I think they fade off. The Brewers have too much veteran presence, too much good pitching at the start of the rotation. The Reds are too young. I think they're about a year away.
Four. Shohei Ohtani does not get traded from now until the August 1st trade deadline.
I agree with you, and I think it's utterly stupid to not trade him, but I agree with you.
I'm actually fine with it because here's why.
No.
Now, here's why. Everyone assumes he's leaving. We've never heard it from him. And I think a lot of us just believe that he's going to leave because we want him to leave because we want to see him in the postseason. So if I'm Artie Moreno, like I get what you're saying in terms of if you don't think you can retain him, you don't want to take that risk. And get some prospects back, obviously. But if you think you could retain him, I don't want to be that guy that traded Shohei Ohtani when he was interested
about
in coming back.
About a year ago, Artie Moreno was toying with selling the team.
Sure.
You think he's handing out $600 million?
I don't know.
The Dodgers are. The Dodgers are. They've spent. They haven't spent at that level. They haven't. They've given Trout the $400 million, but that was over 15 years. They have not spent to that level. Again, a guy that was willing to sell the organization a year ago is now going to hand out $500 million. There's no way. And this is the type of player that if you trade him, you reset your entire farm system by doing that.
Well, you know where I actually think he's going? I have a sports minute that you will hear tomorrow, and I'll give you the exclusive sneak peek right here on the Zach Gelb Show with the big-time CBS Sports Radio sports minute. I think there's six teams that could potentially land him. Mets, Yankees, Padres, going back to the Angels, Dodgers, and then the team that I picked him to go to, the San Francisco Giants.
I could see it.
They tried for Judge.
And they feel slighted by not getting Judge.
Tried for Harper. People forget that. They really wanted Bryce Harper.
Yeah. And here's the thing,
they
too,
made him a big offer, like $310 million.
The losing of Rodon last offseason, too, they lost an ace, so they can use a pitcher also. They feel like they're hitting, they're almost, you know, killing two birds with one stone in a sense. I don't know if they're going to play financially in that ballpark. I don't. They wouldn't go the extra length for Judge. They wouldn't.
Well, if it goes to who has the most money, no one's going to outbid Steve Cohen. But that doesn't mean that he's going to go there. I think Ohtani will, if he doesn't want to go to the Mets, we'll use them as leverage to drive up the price.
But the Dodgers will play in that park.
Yeah.
The Dodgers will play in that Mets territory of financials. I don't think the Yankees will. I don't think the Red Sox will. I don't think there's going to be a team that'll do. I think the Red Sox should be a contender too. By the way,
oh yeah, that's a good one. You can throw the Red Sox in there.
I don't know if Cohen's.
Well, they used to. I don't know anymore.
Cohen's going to be in a different stratosphere. No, they gave Devers $250 million last offseason.
Bogart's no longer there though. Mookie Betts no longer there.
Yeah, well, that was. Cohen is going to play in a stratosphere that no one else is going to play in, and I agree. I think the Dodgers will get to that level, though.
All righty. Third prediction. Three teams that are going to miss the playoffs. Mets, Padres. You agree with both those so far before I get to the third team?
I'm hesitant on Padres, but yes.
They have so much talent.
It's hard to see them missing it. They can easily go on a toot.
On a toot?
Yeah, a little run.
What are they, passing gas? What are we doing here? And then the third team, you're not going to like this one.
They're not making it. I agree. They're not making it.
The Yankees.
It'll be better for the future of their franchise.
Now, I will say, take it for what it's worth, Brett Boone the brother of Aaron Boone, was on the show, and he said a little birdie told him, and he said it was not Aaron. If you believe that or not, that's up to you. That Judge coming back shortly after the All-Star.
I saw that because they're desperate. He's coming back hurt because they're desperate.
Two. The Astros will win the AL pennant, but will lose in the World Series.
False. Their starting pitching is nowhere near where it's been in years past. That's what's gotten there a lot of
times.
It's what's gotten there a lot of the time.
Really good.
Valdez is really good, but they don't have Gerrit Cole. They don't have Justin Verlander. Valdez doesn't have that playoff grit that Verlander had in service them the last couple of years.
I think they got to go add a starter at the deadline.
Their bullpen's missing a lot. Again, the deadline's going to say a lot about what's going to go on, but I don't see that happening.
But the reason why I did it, and I'm not telling you I trust the Astros, in the AL right now.
No, but Texas is awesome in that division.
Yeah, but now, Eovaldi's been phenomenal. DeGrom out for the year. We know how many All-Stars they have. The entire AL team is pretty much the Rangers. But no one really intimidates me in the AL, and that's why I'm just going to go with a team that's always been consistently good and great as well in the Houston Astros.
I get your point. I don't see it this year.
And then finally, Braves win the World Series.
When teams have historical years like this, though, you don't always see them win the World Series. Baseball playoffs is a weird thing. That's what makes the playoffs so great in baseball.
We've seen it last year, right? Well,
what I will say, though, is there's not... When you've seen teams go on these runs or these toots, if you will, in the last couple of
years... Stop with the word toots.
In these last couple of years where teams have these like all-time stretches, you don't... Those teams always had flaws, right? Either the bullpen had a problem or something. The Braves don't really have that.
Every time now, that's what I'm just going to make that sound effect when you say toots.
Where is the Braves' weak spot? The lineup's awesome. The pitching staff is insane. The bullpen's great.
Yeah.
There's not a weak spot there.
Fans are obnoxious. Well, yeah. Just one. Barrett Salee, who I like, who covers college football, is the most obnoxious follow on Twitter when it comes to just baseball. Not his college football takes. If I'm picking a World Series winner right now, if I had two guesses.
You can't not put the Braves in there.
It's the Braves and the Dodgers. The Dodgers didn't even have the best first half.
They're missing a lot, the Dodgers.
But then who else? Who's your number two?
Mets. No, I think...
Mets. Who are you, Hickey?
I'll say this. I think it's a dark horse that has a potential for a run. It is Philadelphia again.
That's not bad.
That's a greatly... That team is built so well.
And I don't think this team is going to go to World Series, but Seattle, if they get in with those three pitchers...
And that lineup. It's a deep lineup.
But also those three starting pitchers. Yeah. Jeez Louise.
That's not a team you want to play. I'll say this. You want to go through the Central. You want to get the Twins in the first round. You want to get the Guardians. You want the Central.
All righty. We'll update you on the biggest stories in the world of sports with some audio. Let's get to a news brief.
Time for your daily news brief. We get you caught up on the rumors, reports, and reconnaissance from the day in sports.
LeBron started all this drama because he wanted to avoid the fact that he got swept in the Western Conference Finals, where he was talking about his future and maybe not knowing when he was getting honored last night at the ESPYs. He decided to bring that up once again, and he made it clear that LeBron James will not be retiring and there's still more basketball to give back to all of us.
The real question for me is, can I play without cheating this game? The day I can't give the game everything on the floor is the day I'll be done. Lucky for you guys, that day is not today.
That would be like, you know, the great Jim Rome getting on the microphone. And 2 months ago, Jim Rome, like, let's just say if he was saying, oh, maybe I'm going to retire. And then he goes, you know what? Lucky for you guys, I'm not going anywhere. Now, let me tell you, if that was the case, you'd have like me, DA, Maggie, Perloff, we'd all be fist pumping. Going nuts, going crazy. I thought that was kind of a ridiculous comment by LeBron. Lucky for you guys, I'm not going anywhere. All right, like, you started all this drama. No, everyone knew you weren't going to retire.
We get it. You're great.
Here's Buster Olney. This is on ESPN with Get Up on where Shohei Ohtani could wind up from now until the August 1st trade deadline.
Well, you start with the Yankees, the Yankees, the Yankees, the Yankees, the Rangers, the Rays. Maybe a small handful of teams, but there's no doubt You talked with sources yesterday. They see the Yankees potentially being the most motivated because Gerrit Cole, Aaron Judge, Giancarlo Stanton, they're middle-aged players right in the prime of their careers. This is the Yankees' window to win now. You bring in Ohtani. Suddenly, the Yankees' rotation with him involved looks so strong. Ohtani hitting in Yankee Stadium, which favors left-handed sluggers. That's something I'm sure the Yankees would be willing to pay for if Ohtani is made available by the Angels.
I know that they're on different networks, but did Derek Jeter and Buster Olney sit down and Jeter said, I'll take Soto and link him to the Yankees, and then you'll take Ohtani? I don't think they're going to make the move either way. Not in season.
It makes where they are as a team right now, it makes no sense to empty your farm at this point. If this was a team
Well, hold on. That's where I'll disagree. I'm always willing to give up the prospects. If you could guarantee me Ohtani's going to re-sign or Soto in a few years is going to re-sign, I'm for it. The way that people obsess over these prospects when you've never seen them play, drives me crazy.
If one of them agrees to sign while as a negotiation tactic of coming here, I empty the entire. I'll sell you one of my teams to get him. But you can't. I even agree to Soto trade. Ohtani, to have him come play here for 2 months and get kicked out in the first round, absolutely not.
Let's go to Mike Gundy as you have Bedlam coming to an end with Oklahoma going to the SEC. And these are the thoughts of the Oklahoma State football coach on that happening.
We have nine conference games scheduled. And then we have, I think, through, 15 years, we're scheduled all the way up. And we're full for the most part. And we have Power 5 teams. And I'm going to go back to what I said earlier. Oklahoma State's not going to change what you do because Oklahoma chose to go to the SEC. They need to change what they do because they're the ones that made their mind up to go to the SEC. So with all the talk from administration and people saying that Oklahoma State needs to do this and that, all Oklahoma had to do was not go to the SEC. So it is what it is. We can cut right to the chase. So for me, I want to listen to the board. I'll listen to the president. I'll listen to the AD. If that's something they want to do, I'm good. But I don't think it's going to happen based on the way the scheduling is. And everybody needs to realize it didn't have to happen if they didn't change leagues.
It sucks. And that's what happens when money in college football, right? And you're always trying to go get the most money and you want to go into the SEC. Now we're not going to have Bedlam between Oklahoma and Oklahoma State. It's one of the best games each and every year. So last year, Kansas State, they win the Big 12, but no one really talked about them because TCU was on this great season and ended up going to the college football playoff and the national championship. Let's listen up to their coach and Chris Klieman.
Right. You'd rather be under the radar, and I understand that. I mean, we're still Kansas State. You know, we're still trying to build the brand, and that's all right. Hopefully you talk to those guys, and we talked about staying humble and staying hungry because, you're going to get knocked off if you fall in love with yourself pretty quickly.
Well, that's the interesting part. If you're a Kansas State player, like you won a championship, a conference championship last year, but I don't think you got the praise that a normal conference champion winner gets. So the mentality, I don't think where you think complacency is going to set in when you win a conference championship, that's really there this year because you didn't even get to go to the college football playoff and really get the words of extolment that a usual conference champion, you know, gets when you end up doing what Kansas State did. But Chris Klieman is an excellent football coach. Let's hear from Sonny Dykes. Year one was a super-duper success at TCU. They ended up, as we just said, even though they lost the conference championship game, they were in the college football playoff, and then they got obliterated in the national championship game against Georgia. Here is Sonny Dykes and how he's preparing his team for this upcoming year, courtesy of Big 12 Radio.
The year is different and unique. You know, and we told our players this, and we continue to tell them all the time. You know, last year's over. I mean, last year has nothing to do with this team, completely different teams. You know, the thing that we want to do is learn from last season, but we're not going to sit around and dwell on it. I mean, nobody here cares, you know, that we won 13 games or played for a national championship or any of that. I mean, you got to go do it again. And
you say you got to go do it again. All right, in terms of making the college football playoff, With four teams, no, but when it expands the year after that, it will make it easier. I don't think anyone expects TCU, especially with what they lost to go be this dominant football team this season. And finally, the starting quarterback at Texas. Is Texas back this year with Quinn Ewers on all the adversity that he's gone through, transferring and then playing well last year, getting hurt, then coming on back? Now, here's Quinn Ewers on that.
The adversity, more of anything, was just my own head. You know, I've never really been through a situation like that where I, you know, wasn't playing how I wanted to. You know, I was pretty successful in high school. Didn't lose a whole lot of games in high school. And then, you know, coming to Texas, you know, we have really passionate fans. And I kind of let that, you know, catch up to myself and kind of, you know, went down some rabbit holes I probably shouldn't have been looking at on social media and stuff like that. And ultimately got in my own head. But, you know, I learned so much from last year that I can take with me this year. And, you know, obviously it wasn't the way how I wanted to play last year, and it wasn't how I wanted the team to end up being like. But, you know, we've learned so much, and, you know, through the adversity, we've grown closer together. We lean on each other a lot more, which is ultimately what you need to be a successful team.
All right, that's the news brief. It is the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. We'll do a little college football fix next. You don't want to miss it.
You're listening to the Zach Gelb Show. We miss college football.
Bennett takes the snap in the shotgun, throws for the corner. Brock Bowers one-on-one. Caught! Touchdown! He ate him alive! Falls down into the end zone. Six more for Georgia.
We can't wait for the 2023 season.
Caleb Williams throws the fade in the corner. Oh, caught! Touchdown, Trojans!
And we're counting down the days to kickoff.
Are we there?
No.
Are we there yet?
I said no.
Are we there yet?
What's wrong with your ears?
Here is your college football fix, only on the Zach Gelb Show.
All righty, college football fix time. Zach Gelb Show, CBS Sports Radio. We'll head out to the guest line right now. Welcome in one of our favorites. You've seen him for years, Big Ten Network, Bally Sports as well. And now he has a big, big, big broadcasting opportunity as he's going to be a part of NBC for their Big Ten coverage this year. And that is former Ohio State linebacker and national champion in Joshua Perry. Josh, appreciate the time as always. Congratulations on the new gig, and how are you?
I'm doing well. Appreciate the congratulations. I'm getting really excited. College football right around the corner. We've already got some conferences doing their media days right now. This is an exciting time of the year.
So for you, you've had a pretty quick rise in broadcasting, and I always love talking to you because you're so prepared and you're entertaining as well. I know you were in the NFL and unfortunately suffered a bunch of concussions and then walked away from the game. What made you think that, okay, you could be not only a good broadcaster, but make a career out of it?
You know, this was an accident, honestly. So I left the league in 2018, and I went back home to Columbus, Ohio, and I started selling real estate. So I was sitting in a real estate class, and the general manager from the radio station, it's the flagship for Ohio State, called me and said, "Hey, I've got an opportunity. We got a seat open if you want to do a pregame show." It was really the pregame show for the Ohio State games. "We'd love to have you." I was like, "I've never done this before." He said, "You'll be fine." So I did it, and then I picked up a couple of local TV shifts doing high school football on Friday nights. I was doing like a six-hour show that had these live look-ins all across the state. And then I got to do a post-game show that nobody really watched for Ohio State games. And I was just able to accumulate reps and build it up that way. And I had an agent who sent out my tape. And then one thing leads to another, and I'm able to continue to get jobs. Biggest thing for me, I absolutely love this. I tell people all the time, this is something I would do for free if I was sitting at a bar and somebody asked me a football question, and I get a paycheck to do it. So one of the luckiest guys around, but, you know, just like the stars align at some point, and that's what happened for me.
And it's got to be surreal for you that you're going to be working for NBC this year.
It's amazing. Again, another one of those opportunities, and you know how this business goes, but a lot of it is right place at the right time. And my contract with BTN was coming up, and obviously with the new media rights deal, there were some people that were hiring, and, you know, was able to get in front of some decision makers and obviously put my best foot forward. But for me to be able to be on a national broadcast where I'm able to honor the game and the conference and the universities that I played against, one that I played for, on a big platform is what's fun for me. And it's never lost upon me that there are a lot of a lot of players out there where this is going to be the last thing that they do. Like, playing college football is going to be the pinnacle for them. And every Saturday is a chance to celebrate them. So really excited to do that.
Talking to Joshua Perry right now, part of NBC's coverage of Big Ten football this year. All right, let's get to your alma mater, Ohio State. We know how good they've been under Ryan Day, but the last 2 years they've lost to Michigan, and those games haven't been close. I know Day hasn't lost many games during his tenure as the coach of the Buckeyes, but some fans are wondering if he's the right guy to find a way to get Ohio State back to where they should be against Michigan. What do you say to the Ohio State fan that maybe is starting to lose patience with Ryan Day?
I get it, but let's you know, hold the phone here. So you mentioned Coach Day hasn't lost a lot of games. Ryan Day has gone in there. He obviously took over a program that was in a really good spot. But he's had a ton of success, and I think that matters. And we can even talk about postseason success where, you know, he's made it to a national championship game. He's been in the college football playoff 3 times. He's won a Rose Bowl, which I know the expectation anymore at Ohio State isn't to win Rose Bowls. He's a really good coach. And I think a lot of people kind of cooled on some of their anger with the you know, the loss still. But the performance against Georgia, I think folks really said is a team that can still compete at a national level. Now, I think a lot of people are not going to be satisfied if Ohio State continues to lose to Michigan. And obviously Michigan is a program that has stepped up over the last couple years and really become a national power and a contender once again. But Ryan Day has done a lot of things extremely well. First of all, is developing quarterbacks. Second of all, getting an offense together. And then early on in his career, too, he had Jeff Hafley, who was one of the best defensive coordinators in America. And I think people believe that Jim Knowles can kind of bring some of that back in his second year. So I know college football isn't patient anymore, which is a shame. I think you can also look to the rival up north if you're an Ohio State fan and see what patience did for them and where that program is now. Ryan Day's a really good head coach. He's going to be there. I think Ohio State fans should be fortunate to have him around.
When you look at Michigan this year, we know all the players that they're returning. Is Michigan ready to take that next step? That's the big question, where they've shown they get to 2 college football playoffs. They've been able to win 2 Big Ten championships, but can they go make a run and actually get to the championship game and win it?
I think they can, but I think some things need to change. And in the day and age we're in college football right now, I think you need to be able to play basketball in the football field a little bit. And, you know, it's not to say that teams who run the ball or have a run emphasis can't win a title, because Georgia ran it pretty well, but they also had a quarterback back there who was extremely crafty and some really good wide receivers, especially at the end of the year once they got healthy. I think their offense is going to have to go through a bit of an evolution. I think J.J. McCarthy has all of the tools to allow that to happen. He's just got to continue to develop. The wide receivers, I think, are still a place where Michigan can continue to get better. But I think they've got a defense that's ready right now. I think they've got a running back room that's ready right now. I think they've got an offensive line that's ready right now. So to answer your question, yeah, they can absolutely do it. I do think that there's still work to be done. But they've also reframed their program, too. They're talking about having to beat Georgia, period, in practice. And this is a program a few years ago that wasn't talking about winning national titles. And I think that shows you, from a psychology standpoint, where they are right now. So, you know, they got some big games on the schedule in Penn State and Ohio State. Outside of that, a lot of games where they can go out there and tinker with what their philosophy has been and find that right balance to have an offense that's not just putting up points by really grinding you, but an offense that's extremely explosive. It can hurt you in multiple ways.
How big of the gap do you think it is right now between Michigan and Ohio State?
I don't think the gap is very wide at all. Like, it's a very intriguing study when you do it, because I think a lot of people would look at Ohio State and say, from a talent perspective, Ohio State's got the edge, and you can look at recruiting rankings and blue chip, and you can look at, you know, the draft and all kinds of different things to say Ohio State's got talent. I think from a philosophy standpoint, Ohio State had evolved their team so much to be able to compete with some of the you know, basketball and a football field type teams that weren't necessarily big up front in the trenches defensively. They had a little bit more of a pass first mentality offensively, which hurts your defense through practice. And I think that's where Michigan was able to carve out an edge. I think from a philosophical standpoint, they've had that edge to withstand adversity throughout the year and then to just get down and dirty and gritty. I think that's something Ohio State can do as well, and I think their strength is probably going to be in their running back room offensively outside of wide receiver with a new quarterback and new tackles they're trying to break in. I don't think it's necessarily a wide edge, but I know in Columbus 2 years feels like an eternity, and I know that people will tell you that the chasm is probably bigger than it really is.
Talking to Joshua Perry, a lot of big expectations for Penn State this year. They have a loaded roster, so give credit to Franklin for the recruiting. But you look at their schedule, it's really easy outside of Michigan and Ohio State. And you know, for Franklin, during his time as the head coach of the Nittany Lions, 3-15 against top 10 teams and 1-10 against top 5 teams. Do you think James Franklin is going to have success this year up against those top 10 teams, which will be Michigan and then also Ohio State?
I mean, if there's a year, it's this year, right? I mean, they've got an all-world quarterback that is going to be ready to play this year. And again, you want to talk about tools and measurables. Drew Aller has them. Running back room loaded. They had a first-rounder come back on the offensive line. Didn't know if he was going to return. Defensively, bunch of young guys got a ton of burn last year, both in the trenches and at the linebacker position. Certainly a little bit of retooling in the secondary. But I love what Manny Diaz was able to do in year one at Penn State, and I think he can take that a step further this year. I like how everything is coming together in Happy Valley. I think there are a lot of people that consume Big Ten football that are happy that the conference is going away from divisions, because when you look at this year, what you would have to run through with Ohio State, Michigan, and Penn State in the East, that is going to be a battle. And all of those teams are extremely talented. Any of them not only could win the conference, but could make some noise in a college football playoff. So Penn State's right there in the mix. I don't think it's just hype. I think they have a really good roster, good coaching staff. And, you know, it's just about now actually getting the job done for the Nittany Lions.
Going into the season, would you rank those three teams, Michigan 1, Ohio State 2, Penn State 3?
That's exactly what I would do. I think Michigan has to have the edge in this one. Returning quarterback, I mentioned the offensive line, the running backs, and also the last 2 years, Ohio State's just entirely too talented. And then I think Penn State is kind of the unproven there, even though we know they're going to be a good team, but I think that's where I'd be.
So who do you like as the fourth best team then in the Big Ten?
Oh, that's a great question. I mean, are we going to look at a Wisconsin with Luke Fickell? Do we feel like, you know, changing that offense and bringing in what they've brought in through the portal is going to be enough? Do we think Nebraska had enough in the cupboard? And then you bring in a Jeff Sims, who's a really electric athlete at quarterback under Matt Rhule. That's where things get a little bit difficult to me. If I had to give the edge, I would say the edge is toward Wisconsin. They've been one of the best teams in college football. I think the highest winning percentage of a team that's not made the college football playoff or the most wins or whatever the number is. I would go with them, but I think the West is really intriguing. I think that's where probably the fourth best team would come from. But a lot of newness going on there. Even Ryan Walters at Purdue off of the year that they had. I'm curious to see how it all shakes out there.
Joshua Perry, you look at Mel Tucker 2 years ago, right? Everyone was loving Mel Tucker, and now people have soured on him. Where do you think his stock is at and how he'll do this season? Because 2-5, then 11-2, 5-7, a big-time contract. People expect him to turn that around, but I don't know how likely that is this year.
Yeah, I don't know how likely it is either. And I think Mel is a fantastic football coach. I love the way that he handles his program in terms of the intensity and the attention to detail that he takes to his job. I think the roster situation is going to be one that he's going to have to continue to work out, because he got a bunch of rentals in for a year and it really worked out for him. Next thing you know, those guys are gone and you don't really have anything going in the pipeline. For this year, again, like, you know, you got some guys on defense that were really important to that program that are no longer there. A quarterback that had played a lot of snaps for you that's no longer there. I don't know what it looks like, but I also think that there's something to having to go through an off season and everybody's telling you about how you're no good. Like, I think that if you got some real dudes in your locker room, you can parlay that into pulling off a couple of upsets you weren't supposed to get.
Is there one team in this conference that maybe people aren't talking about that they should right now?
There's two teams, and it feels like it's been the same two teams the last couple years for me. Minnesota never gets enough credit. I think P.J. Fleck, and I know people have a thing about his personality, it doesn't change how good of a football coach he is. He is one of the most detailed humans I've ever seen at a practice, and it's like clockwork. And his teams play well because they're so well coached. So I'm looking at them to see what they can do over there in a West that always feels like it's pretty open. And then Brett Bielema, again, another great coach, and they lost a ton, both on offense and defense. But I'm curious to see what the rebound looks like. He's got a new defensive coordinator in the building as well. But Illinois, I told people last year, watch out for that team because they're going to be much better than you give them credit for. This year it's going to be a bigger challenge because of all the losses, but I'm excited to see what they look like.
I want to get your take on the Northwestern situation. I'll preface it by saying this is what I think happened. On Friday, they had the two-week suspension, thought they could sweep it under the rug. Then the student journalists did their homework, and it wasn't any new information to the university. It just became public, and then they had to make some changes. I understand why Pat Fitzgerald lost his job. I'm not debating that, Josh, but there's a lot of others at that institution that need to lose their job as well.
It's a very interesting point that you bring up. Like there's a lot of reflection that needs to go on there because I agree with you and everything that had come out. It seemed like the information was known to the university, and those student journalists at the Daily Northwestern did a hell of a job. And for people who are unaware, Chicago has a lot of sports teams. It is media market number 3. The two big newspapers here in town, and I live in Chicago, the Tribune, the Sun-Times, they do not have a Northwestern beat. And so there are no, like, professional journalists that cover that school. It's literally the student journalists. And they have so much power and value because they're that locked in, and I think that's also why journalism is important, neither here nor there. So doesn't seem like there was a lot of new information. Seems like a lot of people fumbled this scenario. I go back to the victims and the whistleblower in this situation, and I wish the best for what happens in that regard. I also think about players in that locker room, and they're probably not totally blameless because some of them were bystanders, but probably most of them weren't active participants, and now they have to pick up the pieces to the scenario as well and try to play a football season. That's really difficult. And for Pat Fitzgerald, had the perfect job and had done really well, and it seemed like it was a place that could never fire him, and then we get this situation. I'm curious to see what litigation looks like for him because it goes back to this idea that the facts were known and they came to an agreement that what he did that Friday, what he did was not a fireable offense or what he did or did not know, and now all of a sudden it is. So there's a lot of mess to this, but again, I like to think about that program and how they rebound and the players in that locker room, and then, of course, the victims and how they deal with that trauma because, I mean, that hazing was serious business. Some of the details that came out, I couldn't imagine. And there are people that are going to have to deal with the real consequences of that.
Yeah, and it's crazy to me. And I know there's a certain culture in football, and you make a mistake, you got to pay for it. But how some people are like, oh, boys will be boys. And then you hear that there was like dry humping going on in the locker room to make a player perform better in practice. I'm reading that, and I've been in football locker rooms at the high school level, right? You've been all throughout high school, college, and the NFL. That behavior to me just is never justified.
No, and I've never been around anything like that either. And it's not to say that there wasn't hazing in places sure. I have been, but it was more so the, hey, rookie, carry my pads out, or hey, you know, go to the store and grab me some snacks type stuff. But never anything that was physical, never anything that was, you know, forced consumption of alcohol, which are some things that you see on college campuses. This was pretty startling. And to hear those details, it does not feel like those are activities that are conducive to team building and to bonding. And it's sad in that regard that anybody could try to flip it that way.
He's Joshua Perry. He's going to be a superstar in the broadcasting business, already is. And you can watch him on NBC throughout the Big Ten college football season. Josh, we'll be talking to you throughout the year. Appreciate the time.
Hey, appreciate you.
You're listening to The Zach Gelb Show.
All right, final segment of the day, Zach Gelb Show, CBS Sports Radio. So by the Monday deadline, July 17th, that's the last day. If you still have a franchise tag, tender to sign, if you even already signed it, that you could have that window to get a long-term deal done, or else if you want to play, you got to sign that franchise tag and play on the tag. So far, Saquon Barkley and Josh Jacobs both have not signed the franchise tag.
So that's important to note for a big reason here. We are now told all the time when it comes to holdouts in the NFL, with the way that the CBA is, it's impossible to hold out because then you're going to get fined by the day. That's if you're under contract. Right now, Saquon Barkley has not signed the contract next year. He's just been tendered a franchise tag. The same is said for Josh Jacobs. So if both these players have the deadline come and go, they don't have to show up to training camp and there's nothing those teams could do about it. Now, if they don't eventually sign the contract, they don't get paid for this upcoming season. So it doesn't benefit either player to not eventually show up, but they can't get punished for not showing up. Where if, let's say, you had a disgruntled player like Buda Baker, let's just say, he's got a few years left in that deal. If Buda Baker was that annoyed at the organization and he said, I'm not showing up, they fine him and it's not refundable like how it was years and years ago where you could get fined and if you show up, they're like, ah, yeah, don't worry about it. Now you still have to pay that fine. So that's important to note here. But I think the Saquon Barkley situation, the Josh Jacobs situation, even though they're similar, they're different. Because I fully believe from now until Monday, the Giants will get a deal done with Saquon Barkley. You just paid and probably overpaid for Daniel Jones. Like, I don't know what Daniel Jones is going to be. He showed you last year he could be a solid quarterback, a good quarterback. But I don't know if there's a ceiling of greatness there. And when you look at the Giants' offensive roster, where it was last year, he had basically nothing around him outside of Saquon. You know, Isaiah Hodgins comes in off the streets from Buffalo, and the next thing you know, he's their number one wide receiver and played really well. Now, they did add Darren Waller in this offseason. So, if you just paid and made a big investment in Daniel Jones, you're not going to find a way to get Saquon Barkley done long-term. That doesn't make sense. And for Saquon, I think you could find a best of both worlds where if he's looking for $13, $14 million a year, it won't make him the highest paid running back. It'll make him pretty close because you have McCaffrey average annual value at 16, Kamara 15, and then you have Derrick Henry and Nick Chubb both at 12.5. So if you give him 13 or even 14, like you can go 4 years, $56 million for Saquon Barkley. But that's not what that contract actually is. It's about the guaranteed money. And you look at total guaranteed money in the NFL. He's not getting, and he doesn't deserve right now because he hasn't been healthy enough. He's not going to get McCaffrey's 36. He's not going to get Kamara's 34. You know, Derrick Henry had $25 million guaranteed, and we know how great Derrick Henry is. As I think that was a four-year, $50 million deal. I think if I'm Joe Shane, this is what I'd do. And McKeon, you tell me who you think Saquon will sign this. 4 years, $56 million. That's $14 million a year. I give you $30 million guaranteed. So that means if, let's just say, Saquon misses 1 year because of injury, or if he's in and out of the lineup, and then after 2 years, you could basically get rid of him, and it won't even hurt you that much.
14's a good number for him, I think. I think it ego-wise, it lets him feel like he's the top paid back in the league, but he's not McCaffrey, which he's not anyway.
And he doesn't deserve it right now. He hasn't been on the field enough.
No, a $30 million guaranteed is a hefty number. I guess...
So what are you going to tell me, then 25?
But I'm more held up on him getting more than Henry guaranteed. But you're
few
also...
years later, though.
But you're also the next guy, so your job is to reset the market. I understand that. Yeah, I guess that's a fair deal. If you're Barkley, I don't know how you don't sign it. That's the crazy thing. I can't picture him holding out anymore. The thing is, he does have a lot of leverage here. And that's the difference that we see when it comes to... Because you see Barkley's comments that he's made, right?
Well, he has leverage because of Daniel Jones.
Yeah, and Barkley has made these comments over, oh, I don't necessarily want to leave. It's not about me being selfish. It's about I'm just getting my value and everything like that. He has leverage, you're right, because of the way Daniel Jones played last year and the fact that he was Jones' only weapon. And they, by giving Jones all that money... The Maras have to see this through. They have to see what the offense can actually do with full weapons. And how do you take Daniel Jones running back away?
You know what it's sort of like? When the moment the Cardinals extended Cliff Kingsbury and Steve Keim, they had to extend Kyler Murray. Mm-hmm. Even though Kyler Murray wasn't deserving of the extension. And you can make the case that, and now definitely make the case that Keim nor Kingsbury needed to get the extension. But once you made that move, you had to give Kyler Murray his extension. Once you pay Daniel Jones, you have to pay Saquon Barkley because you don't have an alternative.
It locked you in, and that's the the corner the Giants kind of drove themselves into by giving Jones that deal this offseason.
Now, I saw that Fox 5 out in, I think this is Las Vegas, they're saying Josh Jacobs will no-show to training camp if a deal is not made with the Raiders by 1 p.m.
Makes sense.
That doesn't surprise me whatsoever because, like I said earlier, he hasn't signed the contract, so there's no punitive action for him for not showing up. The thing with Jacobs is tricky. I think Josh Jacobs is a great player, but Josh Jacobs only had one great season. It was last year, and you got to remember, they did not plan for him to be back this year because last year they declined his fifth-year option, and they had to tag him. And if you look, even though I don't trust Josh McDaniels as a head coach, look where he comes from, New England. They rotate through running backs. They don't have a bell cow back. It was running back by committee. So I don't really think, even though Josh Jacobs is so important to if the Raiders want to have any success this year.
McDaniels wants the value on it, though.
He does not value Josh Jacobs.
No, and that's a problem.
Especially when you trade Waller, you get rid of Carr, which was fine, but you can't bring in then just Jimmy G, and you're so close to Davante Adams just requesting a trade out of there.
And almost, it can happen at the end by the end of this year, Davante Adams running out of there. And that's a problem with the Raiders team, too. There's no value here now. Trade Jacobs either because you're losing the value of now a new team that brings him has to give him a whole new deal. So and this is after free agency. After teams have already given their money to their guys, you're stuck in a really bad spot with this Josh Jacobs. I don't know if he comes back, Zach. Like this might be a sit out the season kind of thing.
Oh no, I don't think that benefits him.
It doesn't benefit him, but why would he sign something?
But what is he going to get next year on the open market? The running back position is devalued. It's devalued.
It's devalued anyway.
Why would you pass up what the tag is, the $10 million or so? That's right away. And you could show up, get your money, and go, oh, I'm Jalen Ramsey. My back hurts or something like that.
That might be what he does. That might be what he does.
And he's a good dude. I've met Josh Jacobs a few times before, like a really good dude. I think that would be tough for him to do to just be like, oh, my back hurts. But business is business.
NFL.
Fun show today. Big thanks to Joshua Perry, each and every one of you, for listening and tweeting to the show at Zach Gelb on Twitter and Instagram, ZACHGELB. Big thanks to Brian Jack McKean. We'll talk to you tomorrow where Kenny Clark and Keaton Slovis will join us. All righty, we out. Bye-bye. Peace!